welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com. Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Dr. Kirk Elliott of McIlvaney Financial Group. Enjoy the show. And Dr. Elliott, is debt ever okay or is it always bad?
No, I think there's some debt that's okay. Buying a house, for example, over time, well, it depends on when you buy a house. I mean, there's times to buy one and there's times not to buy one. If you buy it at the bottom of a market and things are growing, you know what? Your debt service might be 4 or 5%, but that house is growing 10 or 15% a year. Okay, awesome time to invest. So something like that, most people aren't going to have just cash laying around to actually buy a house full, you know? So you can do that, but don't do that if it's going to crimp your style. There's nothing worse than financial pressure on your family and on relationships and on your health. Financial pressure is a killer. So if your debt service payments are going to cause you to lose sleep at night, it's going to affect your health and relationships. It's going to affect your marriage. So don't do it even if it did make sense. But if you can afford the debt service and your debt service, the interest is lower than what the return on your investment is going to be, yeah, I think that's actually somewhat healthy debt. I have this conversation a lot with people who are sending their kids to college. Well, should I drop, 30 or 40 or 50 grand a year or have my kids get student loans for all of this? That's a tough one because I think that just getting the degree and learning the life skills that you learn in college, you would probably learn the same thing from an inexpensive college as you would from an Ivy League college. Now, an Ivy League college does open up some of the doors because of alumni, and they like to hire their own first. But it depends on the kind of studying that you're going into, if even that would make sense. But boy, there's been a huge rise over the last 5 years, even of kids just going to vocational school and learning a trade, like computer programming or graphics design or nursing or something like that. Well, you don't need a full-on college degree, but if you could just learn a specific trade, a nurse, for example, is a fantastic one of that. I mean, you can a nurse is a portable job that is in demand everywhere. And you know what? You just learn that specifically. You're going to pay way less for college than you would going to 4 years or a master's degree or PhD like I went to. I can't make a blanket statement, so to speak, but based on the circumstances, that might make a lot of sense for families.
But now, if you know that you're going for a master's or you know you're going for a doctorate, does it make sense to maybe really do the first 2 years at a community college and then maybe the next 2 years at a more affordable state college? When it comes time for the job interview and they're looking at where you graduated from, is where you were a freshman and a sophomore, is that really going to make a difference?
Doesn't really make a difference as long as you make sure that junior college that you're going to or whatever it is, that all the credits transfer. I mean, if they don't transfer and you have to take those classes over again, you're just wasting time and money. So make sure they go to a junior college where all the classes that you take will transfer over to the four-year university. And then I think you just save money that way because and the end result is your degree is going to be from the University of Colorado or the University of North Carolina or wherever you go. It's not even going to show that first part.
And then what you were talking about, debt service. Now, if you're renting, you're more than likely you're paying somebody else's debt service, right? So even in a bad market, could it make more sense to buy than to rent?
I don't think so. I mean, there's times – we'll just look at maybe 5 years ago. Well, actually before the 2008-2009 market collapse in real estate, it was way cheaper to rent than it was to actually buy a home because prices have inflated so much that for temporarily, I think it's always better to ultimately buy and you pay that off and then you have no debt service. You don't have a mortgage or rent. But just waiting 4 or 5 years might have made the difference, like in Las Vegas, for example, a 50% reduction on the price of a home. 50%. So in that sense, it was certainly worth it renting for the short term. You certainly don't want to rent forever, but there is a time and a place for everything. And if the pricing is just too high in a market, every market's going to go through peaks and valleys. I would just wait till there's a correction, buy on the dip, save up your money during that time, and have a larger down payment. It's only going to work in your favor.
And that's really, really easy to time when you're doing it in the past. But for going forward, where do you think we're at in that real estate cycle?
Well, I think that, I mean, that's a really good question, Mark, because I think as interest rates start to rise, the affordability of homes is going to come down. And, well, we've just seen rates start to rise. Well, it's not going to be just one. They're not going to end it at 25 basis points. We'll probably have 6 to 8 more rate increases next year would be my guess. And so as rates start to go up, the value of housing is going to come down. It's pretty much a function of interest rates. Number one is the primary cycle. The secondary cycle is just a bubble, you know, a bubble bursting. You can't have 50% growth in real estate year after year after year after year after year. At some point, it just starts to peter out. Well, there's some great real estate timing letters that I look at, like the Campbell real estate letter. He's a guy from San Diego, one of the best I've seen. And he's very accurate in saying, okay, it might be a great time to buy in Tampa, but a horrible time to buy in Denver. You know, he watches these things, and there's stuff that you can find on the internet to see if your specific market is higher or low, you know. And that's, you know, and another way to just do it without even looking at somebody, something like that, is look at the availability of rentals in your area. You know, if you can't find an apartment or a house to rent for anything, well, that probably means that people can't really afford the housing market in that area. And so I would wait because prices are going to come down.
And as a wealth manager, what are some of the areas you consistently see people wasting money in?
Oh, my word. Every family has their Achilles heel, but eating out too much is a biggie. You know, not if you buy stuff in the interior of the store as opposed to the exterior. But what I mean by that is you've got all your boxed stuff. You've got your cereal and your chips and your cookies and everything else in the interior. Well, on the exterior, you've got your vegetables and your meats and things that you can actually make that will be way more healthy and cost you less every single month to actually do it. And so I, you know, it's just some of those little spending habits. Don't buy bags of chips and don't buy crackers when it's crazy cheap just to make popcorn. You know, it's little things like that, but most people spend way too much money going to Starbucks, getting their expensive cup of coffee daily or a couple times a week. I mean, I did a little video training. We have a course for homeschoolers called The Missing Chapter. It's just 7-minute video lessons where we talk about some of these important concepts. Well, I have one called the $2 million cup of coffee. Well, if you would actually invest, because I knew a person who would go to Starbucks every single day, except Saturday and Sunday, so 5 days a week, and she would get a Frappuccino, but I just used the cost of a Frappuccino. It was like $4 and something cents. Well, if you would invest that instead of spend $4 a day, from the time you're 21 till the time you're 60, you'd have over $2 million in your retirement account. So you have to ask yourself, is that cup of Frappuccino every day worth $2 million? The answer is probably not.
Wow.
You know, and there's a lot of things. Everybody has those different Frappuccinos in their life. I'm not picking on Starbucks. Could it be people who have satellite or cable? You know, having the most expensive package instead of going down just to the medium package or the low package, or going out once a week. You know, why don't you go out once a month or just eat in? Don't go out at all and make it a date night with your spouse that way. I mean, there are so many areas that we can cut the fat from our lives, and it would be mind-numbing. It is not difficult to retire a millionaire just by cutting out some of the things that we might not actually need.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out silver.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And what's some other good examples of ways to cut personal expenses?
Oh, you know, and instead of, you know, going to a movie, don't ever go to a movie. When you know, if you go to a movie with your family, it's $7 or $8 every cent for each person, and then you want to get popcorn unless you sneak snacks in. But at minimum, it's $25. Well, just go to a Redbox and get a movie for a dollar. You know, so there's things like that. Only go out to eat once a month if you like to go out a lot. You know, have oatmeal instead of boxed cereal. Have popcorn instead of chips and crackers. You know, just some of these things we think that we need, but we just don't need it. You know, how about don't buy sodas, don't buy Cokes or Monster drinks or whatever. You know, some of those little soda stream things, you know, we just do seltzer water and we throw some lemon juice in there, and it's amazing. And it's so incredibly cheap. So these are just things that you don't necessarily have to buy. I mean, my wife is the queen of finding amazing-looking designer clothes at, like, thrift stores and stuff. And here's the thing. We've got friends that say, Kirk, I can't believe that you guys would go to a thrift store. It's like, well, why not? Well, because you don't have to. You can afford to go to regular stores. It's like, yeah, that's why we can afford to go to regular stores. It's because we live our life in balance. We don't waste money on stuff that we don't need. And I'm not saying that our family's perfect. We've got stuff that we could still cut fat out of. But, you know, it's a process. The key is to just start. And then once you get comfortable cutting one thing out, find something else to cut. Make this a family exercise. You know, have this be dinner table discussion and you know, because in our missing chapter curriculum that we go over, we ask the kids, it's like, okay, find things in your area that you could cut out. And then ask your parents at the dinner table, Mommy and Daddy, what are areas that we could cut out of our lives? You know, why do we have that expensive satellite bill? Why do we have the most expensive cellular plan that we can? Do we need all that data on our phones? You know, things of that nature. It's like have the family talking about that together and have this be something that you work on together as a family. You have accountability to each other, and really you can make a huge difference not only in your family's lifestyle now, but for future generations, because whatever you don't spend in retirement, you can pass on to the next generation or give to charity or give to a foundation. I mean, boy, it makes me sick to my stomach when we spend way too much on ourselves and there's so many hurting people in the world.
Well said. At the in the first half of the show, you talked about people that they're having trouble because those unforeseen events happen, the personal chaos, so which kind of creates our own personal little financial crisis or personal economic collapse sort of. I guess the best way to hedge against that is an emergency fund. So how do we go about saving emergency fund? How do we allocate funds to that, and how much should we save up?
Well, that in my 70-10-10-10 example, you know, the 10% that you're saving, that becomes your emergency fund. So and I would say, just depending on your comfort level, have 3 to 6 months of expenses that you have in emergency fund cash. It can be in a bank, it can be in a savings account or under the pillow kind of cash if the banks go under. These crazy low interest rates, it doesn't really make much sense to have it be in the bank. Just keep it under the pillow if you need cash for some reason. But I would say have 3 to 6 months. Then after that, after you've built up your emergency fund, then you start saving, just the 10%, every month for vacations and for things of that nature. And make sure that, I'm not saying live like paupers. I'm not saying just to have a miserable life. You can still enjoy life. You just have to prioritize some things. But that's how I would do it. That's where it comes from, is that savings component of the 70-10-10-10.
What mistakes do you see your clients making in the arena of insurance? Are they overinsured, underinsured?
Well, insurance is an interesting thing. I wouldn't buy whole life or universal, because or variable life, you're just paying too much for it. I would basically, I think it was A.L. Williams, way back in the 80s, who said invest, get term and invest the rest. Well, that's what I would get. I would just get a 20-year term policy. It's going to be very cheap. And you keep that until you're self-insured. That's the thing that people think, well, we always need insurance. No, you need insurance to help protect, your loved ones if you were to die in a plane crash tomorrow, to pay for your kids' college if you were to die in a plane crash tomorrow. So until you've got some of these things done, you feel adequate in your investments that, if I have $1 million saved up and interest rates are at 10%, I'm making $100,000 a year. Or let's say it's at 5%, you're making $50,000 a year, basically forever. I would feel good with my wife having that, with all of our bills paid off and having enough to pay for my kids to go to college. Once you feel comfortable with that, you don't need life insurance anymore. And so that number is going to vary from person to person. I can't really answer what is a good amount of life insurance to have. It's like, I don't know. What makes your family comfortable? How much do you want to live on every year? How much is college going to cost? Once you add those kind of things up, then that will tell you how much you should probably have.
And the last time we spoke, we talked about MediShare and how they are a much, much more affordable solution for health insurance than what most people would be able to get from the Obamacare exchanges, and they're not supporting abortion and sex changes and a lot of other unbiblical lifestyle choices. Do you like those types of programs?
I love them. You just have to read the fine details, if make sure it's right for you. Sometimes there's pre-existing conditions. If you were going through a cancer or a diabetic and you had a lot of ongoing expenses or whatever medically, just make sure that those kind of plans are going to cover you for something like that. And if not, well, sadly, you might have to go with another alternative until you can think of something else. But boy, if all else being equal, I love those, because you're right, Mark, you're not supporting the trash that you don't want to support, and it's way cheaper, and you can use that money to invest and build up your emergency fund and whatever else.
And we talked a little bit about gold and silver. We talked about real estate briefly, and we brought up the point that if you're renting, a lot of times you're paying somebody else's debt service. So I guess the reverse is true. If you're the property owner, somebody else is paying your debt service. Do you like real estate as an investment when the market's right?
When the market's right, absolutely. And in fact, right now, I think that's how you should look at real estate. Don't look at real estate for growth. Look at real estate as the potential to spit off income for you, because the more unaffordable houses become, the more people are going to need to rent. And having low cost renting options for family, especially in a turbulent economy, you're never going to be at a lack of people renting from you. You know, you're always going to have cash flow there. So I love it, especially in times like this. I don't like luxury rentals. I don't even like upper middle class rentals. I just like the lower end, cheaper kind of rentals, because you're always going to have people in them, always. And sometimes when the markets are really good, you're getting that plus growth on the property. But right now, don't expect growth, not with a rising interest rate environment. Just be content with income that's spit off from rental income. I love it.
And when you say cheap, do you mean affordable? Because I don't suppose you want to really get stuff in the ghetto, right? Because if you get the stuff at the bottom of the bucket, your tenants are going to also pretty much be bottom of the bucket, right?
I mean, that is a problem for sure. I mean, I have a friend who this is amazing. He does very, very well. He's made, I don't know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month. He makes a ton. But he buys every month, he'll buy what he calls mini mansions. He's in southern Texas, and he can buy mobile homes for $10,000 to $20,000. So every month he takes about a third of his income, which would be, you know, in that range, $10,000 to $20,000. He's buying these things for cash, no debt, and he can rent them for $500 to $600 a month. Granted, he has to have the sheriff show up every once in a while because people aren't paying their bills, and he has to boot them out. And he's got a heart of gold, and he hates doing that, but it's business. So there's always somebody in him. Sometimes you do have some of those headaches, but now he's, over the last 4 years or so, he's probably got 30 of those things. No debt, because he just paid for them as he went along. And, you know, 30 times $500 a month, you know, he's making $15,000 a month cash flow. So a lot of people obviously don't have that kind of income, but just do it on a smaller scale. Save up until you could buy something like that for cash, get $500 a month, and then go to the next one. It's like that's a crazy, crazy way to do it. It's, and where we live, that doesn't work, because even in our neck of the woods, a cheap, nastiest, most horrible mobile home that you can find is probably $80,000. But depending on the part of the country that you live in, I actually don't mind being a slumlord kind of a, I know that's just a horrible term and I don't mean it to sound nasty, but just the very low income type properties, because you're going to have people in them all the time. Whether the economy's booming or horrible, it seems like they're always full.
And what other investments do you like at the moment?
That's it. I like gold, silver, real estate for income, and cash. That's it.
Awesome.
And cash is just your emergency fund. You know, once you've established your emergency fund, you don't have any more cash, because it's not helping you. It's actually hurting you, because you're falling behind with purchasing power loss. But right now, those are the only things that make sense to me, is gold and silver and real estate for income and cash. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, you could add bonds into the mix. You could add stocks into the mix. You could add in real estate for growth. But not right now. I don't see the times that we saw in the 80s and 90s happening again for maybe another 10 years or so, because we're now in a rising interest rate environment, not declining interest rates. That affects everything.
And then do you think it's a good idea to keep some cash on hand for in case we get sort of a deflationary cycle and some buying opportunities come up?
Absolutely. Well, cash on hand, I would look at it. I mean, you could use cash in the bank for that, but I would use cash on hand for if there is a banking crisis and the banks shut down, or there's a bail-in or something like that, like we saw in Greece and Cyprus. You know, when you have banking collapses and you can't access your bank account, your savings account, your ATMs don't work, or from an electromagnetic pulse or something like that, well, cash on hand and gold and silver, anything barterable, is going to be the only thing that really helps you. I mean, that's obviously more of a gloom and doom scenario, but it's something that we have to consider because they're all very plausible.
Sure. Really, really great advice. Dr. Kirk, thanks again so much for taking time to come on the show and talk to us. You want to tell us one more time where folks can go to find your work and connect with you?
You bet. They can actually reach me at my phone number. That's the easiest. It's my direct line. It's 866-211-8986. That's 866-211-8986. Or the email right into my office is K Elliott, that's K-E-L-L-I-O-T-T, at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney. So McIlvaney, good old Scotch-Irish name.
Awesome. Thanks again, and we really appreciated you taking the time out to talk to us today.
You are so welcome. It's my pleasure.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how modern conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com.